We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
More of your calls in just a moment. I told you I was going to change the subject to Charles Barkley at 4 o'clock, and I want to do that pretty much for our own entertainment purposes. Now, I do know that Charles was on the Afternoon Delight. Good guest. Go get him if you can. But, man, how much weight can you put into a man's words when he juggles his words to suit whatever situation he's in, whatever media moment he catches himself in? I'm sure you heard Charles Barkley this morning on ESPN laying full blame on the doorstep of the Warriors as a franchise.
Yes, there is somebody to blame. The Golden State Warriors for putting KD out there. Listen, that was not right. You know, if you go back and look at the last 2 weeks, the article comes out, KD's worst nightmare, with the Warriors are winning without him. Then you come out, you read the articles, the Warriors are really unhappy when KD won't risk his Achilles. They're frustrated with KD. Now this man has to be feeling some type of way. They shouldn't have put that man out there. You know how I know it? Because he blew out his Achilles.
Okay, that's an awful lot of evidence-based, results-based Captain Hindsight nonsense, because the 2 points he brought up to lay blame on the Warriors had absolutely nothing to do with. First of all, KD's worst nightmare was a story by Chris Broussard. It wasn't from the Golden State Warriors. The story about how unhappy everyone was with him, well, that was Tim Kawakami. That had nothing to do with the Warriors. So, like,
did he quote any Warriors? Did he even cite Anonymous Warriors is actually saying that?
No.
Or was this another?
No, that would have been an actual.
We're hearing around the NBA.
That would have been a sourced piece of information. There is no bibliography ever turned in by Charles Barkley. And when it got back to just talking about the player, he says, oh, man, you got to protect these players from themselves. What are you, crazy?
I don't think you can ever leave it up to a player, because players always want to play. But I think if you ask any rational player, Damon, Jalen Rose, Jay Williams, to put a guy who hadn't played basketball in over a month into game five of the finals and had some type of move around the day before, I don't think that's fair to that man.
Hey, it might not be fair, but it's the deal Kevin Durant made and took. You got to live with the results. Also, I'd like to point out that Kevin Durant is a full-grown, all-day-long man. M-A-N. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Infinity pools, mansions, good living all around. A 9, 10, 11, 12, 12-year NBA veteran with an MVP, scoring titles, rings, as big of a humanly basketball-playing profile as a human being can get. Here's Charles Barkley on Zion Williamson not returning to college.
When we get to the point where you got clowns on television saying, oh, don't play, that's what you do, Ernie. That's what we do. We play basketball. I don't ever want to see anybody get hurt. This kid looked like he's going to be a fantastic player. But I get so mad when people like act like money's the only thing that matters in the world. Like, oh, dude, you're going to go in the NBA. Don't play. I mean, that's ridiculous.
So, Zion Williamson should risk life and limb for free for Duke, but a full-grown paid multimillionaire shouldn't listen to his own instincts that you say every basketball player has and the player plays.
A man who, by the way, can opt in for $31.5 million, more than any of us will ever make in our entire lives, and just get it for doing nothing. If he wanted to do that, he could do that today.
Right, Kevin Durant will make more money in his career rehabbing next year than Charles Barkley probably did in the last decade.
And yet, irresponsible by the Warriors to allow him to play. Just the notion that they somehow forced him to play is so absurd. What these people are saying is they let him do the thing he wanted to do that they thought was reasonably safe. How dare they? And it just, It doesn't make any sense. And can I just quickly, because he basically mentions the Tim Kawakami article. And that article, a couple things. First of all, Tim quotes a number of Warriors as saying, basically, we totally trust Kevin Durant and hope he comes back. And then concludes at the end, maybe they're upset at him for not being back yet. Which was, frankly, a conclusion that was Tim's and had no basis whatsoever in what the players actually said. And Tim is a columnist who's more than fair for him to share his opinion that it's possible someone might feel like Durant's been out too long, but that was never an opinion that any of the people on the team suggested or that Tim suggested someone on the team said to him off the record or anything like that. It was purely Tim Kawakami's conclusion. So for Charles Barkley to cite that as evidence of the Warriors applying pressure to Kevin Durant is, like, I'm all for Charles being paid to be a hypocrite and silly TV, but you reach a level where if people think your comments mean something, you're being irresponsible. That's what Charles is doing.
It's hard to defend this one because the one thing he says that betrays everything is the thing that most people in the business are doing today. A bad thing happened. Someone is at fault.
I know because he hurt himself.
Yeah. It's an indisputable fact that he hurt himself. But it is a self-contained, indisputable fact until the point that a doctor, an actual doctor, says this was preventable because of X, Y, and Z medical factors. Here they are. When you have that, then you can start looking for blame. Until then, what you've got is a collaborative decision that went horribly wrong. And not every decision that goes horribly wrong has a culprit.
888-957-9570. As crazy and as devastating as the Durant injury is, we got a game 6. The Warriors officially won. I mean, they're still alive. There's an awful lot of funeral dirge in the feeling of this. And you know, look, Steve Kerr said it best. It is, what would you say? It's a great win at a terrible cost or whatever he said.
And a horrible loss at the same time, yeah.
A great win
and a horrible
loss.
That's all they've had in this finals.
Yeah. It really is.
They're averaging an injury and a half per win.
Yeah, it's been brutal. If they go ahead and they complete this, folks, that's it. I mean, we're going to have to start taking some of these first takers and first talkers and Skip Baylessers and just ask them to leave the room forever. Because there's going to be nothing left to say that could ever be more interesting than the results of, the Warriors actually came back from down 3-1 while the entire team was sitting in a MASH unit, and they won the NBA Finals.
They'll figure it out.
If they do this, it's the single most hard-to-shoot holes-in championship that's been won in your lifetime. It's impossible to say that they weren't worthy of this if they got it. Someone will try. Someone will reach, just like Charles Barkley reaches with every other next sentence. But, good God, they're alive. We got game 6 Thursday. I didn't think we were ever going to walk into Oracle Arena for anything other than the Ice Capades or a Harlem Globetrotters game ever again. We got one more game at Oracle. That right there is a reason enough to dance in the streets, right? Drew in Oakland. Hello, Drew.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
What's up?
Hey, just real quick on the Charles Barkley. I understand he's got a distillery, so maybe he's been hanging out there too long. But this is also the same guy that had the Bucks against Portland before the conference final. But the comment on the Kevin Durant thing, and by the way, Tim Roy was amazing last night on that last call. But on the Kevin Durant, unfortunately, I think he played because, you know, we were down 3-1, and if the Warriors lose and he doesn't get in there, and then he's got to deal with that whole off season of second guessing him. But I mean, Kevin Durant, he's amazing. I mean,
you know, Drew, when it comes to second guessing Kevin Durant, there's more when he does play than when he doesn't play. I mean, the guy's just damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. While the people, while people continue to search for the reasons, like what brought Kevin Durant back into the mix for the Golden State Warriors? What made him rush his own return if he was a culpable member of the, you know, decision-making process, which of course he was? Let me tell you what it was. He wants to win another NBA championship. It's that easy, folks. If you're still Sherlock Holmesing the crime scene here, you're wasting your time. I know why this happened. Kevin Durant wanted to be a champion.
How about this?
He wanted to help the Warriors win a championship. That's the only reason why he was playing last night.
How about this? He came here to play on a team because he wanted to win championships and he wanted to play a brand of basketball that he found appealing. All along, the whole time he's been here, everyone around says what a great teammate he is, what incredible willingness to sacrifice he's shown for this team. Maybe they've just all been telling the truth the whole time. Is that so hard to believe? Maybe he's just a guy who loves basketball and wants to play basketball, and specifically play basketball at the highest possible level competing for a championship. And maybe that's all that happened here, is a guy who really loves basketball and wanted to compete, pushed himself a little harder than maybe was most wise to do so, but that doesn't mean we have to start screaming and pointing fingers. We can just say, what a tough guy, what an admirable attempt, and what a bummer that this is the way it turned out.
What's wrong with you?
I know. I apologize.
What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry for yelling.
An entire industry has
been built. Wait, I have something for this. I have something for this.
Boy, I'll tell you what. This is one of those times I wish I could cuss.
I can't understand that. What did he say?
Oh, it's one of those times I wish I could cuss.
Oh, okay. It's bad audio. I wouldn't play it again. It's hard to understand.
All right. I'll try to clean it up for the next play.
Plus, he's retired.
Little fuzzy. Little fuzzy.
We're not even sure he's alive.
888-957-9570. There was a talk of Tim Roy's call. Yeah, it was awesome.
Leonard right side stops. Feeds VanVleet. VanVleet, one dribble. Get the corner. Low, and it's blocked by Draymond. The game's over. The game's over. The game is over. The Warriors have won. 106-105. Keep the lights on at Oracle. Dust those seats off. That old barn's got one more dance.
I love it. One more dance Thursday night.
By the
Be
way,
there.
I couldn't tell if Draymond blocked that. The TV announcers couldn't tell that Draymond blocked that. The NBA was reviewing it after the game to be sure that Draymond blocked that. And Tim Roy had it right on the moment it happened.
Well, I had it, too, when he hit the backboard, just like the side of the backboard. I mean, Lowry,
oh, I thought he just blew it.
Lowry might not hit a lot of big shots at the end of games, but he ain't that either. Like, of course Draymond got his fingertip on.
Oof.
Well, okay.
I thought it was just terrible.
We don't know where Tim Roy was sitting in the arena. He might have just had a great angle on it.
Yeah,
and
okay.
He does have eyes, but I don't know that it's unreasonable, that it's reasonable to say, well, the TV didn't have it, because the TV shot from a different angle. I mean, the places they put,
I'm just saying.
The places they put visiting radio in the NBA Finals are.
He's in the second row last night. Second row last night. That's where. So the places where they put radio in Oakland suck. In Toronto, you still get nice seats. Tim Roy and Barnett were sitting second row press conference. Press row last night.
Well, then he got a good angle and he called
good
frankly.
Angle.
And I'm not trying to down him at all, but other people don't get that same angle.
It was a great call by Tim Roy. We've got him coming up at 6:10 tonight, a Tuesday trifecta. A little bit later this hour, another guest that you're going to want to hear. And to tell you who that is, Matt Kolsky.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Got a guy here on the text line saying, hey, are we going to discard or not address the poor officiating from last night? Well, not really, because it didn't cost the Warriors a win. So why would you really worry about it? Specifically, Damon, in the fourth quarter, that three attempted by Clay, who's fouled on the elbow by Lowry. Well, look, there are touch fouls on the arm that are missed all the time, and the Warriors got away with a couple, too. I actually thought there was a clear foul on a Kawhi three late in the game that they got away with. Damon, what about that super quick trigger on Draymond's tech while Siakam gets to Garnett roar after his dunk on Draymond? Will Golden State ever get a fair chance? No. I mean, we've described this over and over to you again. When it comes to officiating, I think a lot of officials look down their brim of their nose at the Golden State Warriors, and what is good for the goose is not good for the gander in terms of a way a game gets officiated. We've seen evidence that suggests I'm not far off over and over and over and over and over again. You could say there's a conspiracy. There isn't. It's just bad officiating. I mean, there's bad officiating in the NBA and the NHL. It's all over the place these days.
I just, I wanted to say this earlier when you said obvious screen on DeMarcus Cousins, and I just, that's an unconscionable call to me. Yeah, he moved a little bit.
Oh, dude, he hit more. That was the biggest moving screen in the history.
I totally disagree. We see that in final minutes every single game, and it is never called. And to insert yourself into that moment of the game with an off-ball screen offensive foul call, I thought was absurd. Just absurd.
Oh, I didn't like it either. But that, you know, here's the thing. There's a lot of things I don't like, and then I don't see it. I saw that moving screen as much as I see you right now. I mean, my mom would have called that.
Fine, but I guarantee you if we look at the video of the Raptors in the final 2 minutes, they set four of those, and the Warriors set three others. And to call that one, it's absurd, in my view. Completely absurd. And look, they won the game, so if, and I don't even necessarily think over the long haul, I don't know, maybe these things come close to working themselves out, but I know that two of the five games of the NBA Finals have been mangled by officiating. Mangled. And that stinks. Much like Kevin Durant getting hurt stinks. It, as someone who loves basketball and wants the best game possible called as accurately as possible, it stinks that 40% of the NBA Finals has been refereed horribly, in my view.
That's about the average number.
Well, it should be better in the finals.
Well, yeah, and I should be tall and thin.
I don't agree. Okay. I like you just the way you are, Ray.
You hypocrite. No, I look, at this point, it's clear that officiating is not good.
Yeah.
It's clear that it's not going to get fixed anytime soon because the methods that the NBA applies to, quote, make it better, almost invariably make it worse because they don't want to accept the possibility that technology is not the answer to this. It's training. It's returning sort of power on the floor to officials and then teaching them how to wield it properly so that the game is the central thing, not the relationship between officials and players. There are lots of things you can do, none of which the league wants to do. So this is what you get. Deal with it.
This segment, sponsored by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visit friedmansappliance.com today. Jonathan, San Francisco. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, I just want to say, man, this is probably the best game I've ever seen. You know, we don't know what's going to happen to Game 6 or Game 7, but yet, that's the best game I've ever seen, from the pregame to the postgame, all the emotional ups and downs, from the way they open the game, hitting their first 5 3-pointers, and showing the world that Durant is the best player, and it, you know, shows you how spaced out everything is with him in there, to the saddest moment in my sports life, just seeing him going down, you know, having that worst case scenario happening for him. I'm so down for the guy, but you know, the way, you know, Kawhi Leonard just asserted his greatness late in the fourth quarter, you know, getting that 10 points just like it's nothing. He looked unstoppable. I thought we were going to lose, but the Splash Brothers with Andre and Iguodala and Draymond just, he said, no, hey, slow your roll, Kawhi. We're still here. We're the Warriors. They went bang, 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 and witnessing what maybe is the best defensive sequence I've ever seen, from the way Andre just put on that double team at the right moment so that Kawhi would give up the ball, to Draymond Green going up there to, you know, block the shot. Because I'm scared if that ball ever makes it close enough, I have a feeling they're celebrating.
Oh, look, I mean, I really thought, the minute Draymond got that backcourt and then DeMarcus got that offensive foul, I thought, well, you just giving them two shots to beat you and the shot clock is theirs and you're gonna walk off losers.
The Warriors,
I thought they were in big trouble.
They were done several times down the stretch of that game. When Kawhi ripped off that run and they went down 6 points, when the DeMarcus offensive foul happened, and even though they were up one, it felt grim at that moment. Obviously, when Kevin Durant went down early, it felt incredibly grim. And that's a great call from Jonathan, because obviously we're going to have to talk about the Kevin Durant injury. It's a huge story today, and we've spent a lot of time on that. But what we're going to remember, hopefully, years from now is how the remaining core of this team showed what they're made of. And it's what we've been saying they're made of for the last 5 years, while idiots all over the place talked about them being soft or just a jump shooting team or all the things they couldn't do. They're champions. They're effing giants, like Steve Kerr said they were. And they showed it again last night. And that's the most meaningful thing about yesterday from a Warriors perspective. As upsetting as the Durant stuff is, these guys are champs. And they played like it. They have the heart of champions. They fight like champions. That's who they are.
Rightfully so. We accused them several times this year of being willfully. I mean, they willfully let go of the rope. In an awful lot of the games that they played, they pulled on that rope until that clock hit 000 in a way that is probably going to be more respected than any championship moment. It really it's so weird how this works. There are some times where a fighter earns more respect in defeat than they do in victory.
And that's Rocky, right?
It kind of, yeah. And the Warriors absolutely, I think, garnered some more respect by people who want to call them a soft jump-shooting team that's too talented to ever really worry about losing a basketball game. I think people saw the Warriors last night, and they came away going, that's some big boy basketball right there. No matter how much I don't even like them, I got to admit. That's man time.
You wish that was the way this is going to play out, but it's not, because we look, and again, I'm talking about the collective here, we look at events differently than we used to. The thing that's going to stand out from this game that people will talk about 10 and 15 years from now is the Durant injury, because that's how the NBA is viewed now.
I think it depends what happens in the last two games.
Right.
If the Warriors win, it's different. But in all other situations, Toronto will not get its due because the conversation will be about Durant.
We don't spend much time talking about Love and Kyrie going down for the Cavs.
No, but they do in Cleveland.
Well, but that's the small. the minority.
But 15, you know, hasn't been nearly the dramatic series that this is. And game five, right now, nobody can remember anything that happened in games 1 through 4. This game is a seminal moment in the immediate 5 to 8 years future of the NBA. This game will be remembered specifically for the Durant injury.
Honestly, I'm just going back through games 1 through 4. Honestly, I got nothing. I got nothing. Yeah. Like, this game is so thoroughly replaced.
Yeah.
Every talking point.
Yeah, I mean, this will probably be the game in the Warrior run that people remember most of all.
But the game was 18 hours ago. I just think it...
Tell me the most memorable thing, the most memorable game in this run.
It's probably the loss in Game 7 to the Cavs.
Or do you mean in this playoff run?
No.
It's the Game 6 win in Houston.
Since 2015.
The most memorable game since 2015.
What's the one that you will think of first?
It's either the Klay Thompson. I mean, this is specific to me, but it's Klay Thompson Game 6 in Oklahoma City. It's the loss in Game 7 when Draymond and LeBron were both incredible. It's the Kyrie shot to win that game. It's Kevin Durant's jumpers in LeBron's face to clinch titles.
You got Iguodala getting pinned by LeBron.
That's why that
I'll remember
the
that
loss
forever.
Is memorable because of Iguodala getting blocked. Yeah, it's plays that I remember, right. And I think I'll remember from this game. Sure, Durant getting hurt, but also Steph and Klay each draining a three to tie and then put them ahead in the last minute of the game.
Got to have them threes,
right? And certainly, if the Warriors end up pulling off what I still think would be a highly improbable thing and actually win this right now. I think we'll remember Kevin Durant's injury, but this will be a defining victory for the franchise.
It's going to be special. It's going to be remembered for a really, really long time. By the way, just real quick, you know, memories of the run. It's basically Durant in Cleveland picking out his spot on the floor and hitting it in LeBron's eye two times in a row.
And Kawhi did that the last two games, and boy,
You talk about
somehow
that run he went on, we cut it up. He went omnipotent for like 3 minutes right there.
Leonard down the right side takes a three in transition, and Toronto leads 96-95 Raptors. Leonard takes a three over Cousins. It's good! 101-97, Kawhi Leonard. Unbelievable. Leonard low with the dribble. Waits. Accelerates right side. Pulls up on the way. Got another one. They can't stop him. Leonard 5 of 7 with 12 points here in the fourth quarter.
Whatever he wanted against whoever he wanted from wherever he wanted. That was, I really thought that was a championship performance happening and unfolding in front of my eyes. I did think the Warriors were done in that moment. It's amazing.
But there were my point about yesterday is that there were a lot of championship moments. But again, the championship moment that everybody thought they were going to get just blew into smithereens. And I don't think this is recency bias to say that when people look back, if the Warriors win, this will still be the defining moment. It won't be Game 7. And it won't be Game 6. It'll be this one.
It'll be the night that Kevin Durant sacrificed a year of the prime of his career for a Golden State Warrior title. You're right.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I want to go that melodramatic about it. I don't think he fell on a grenade to save the platoon. He was a victim of incredible bad luck, and which was overcome by those remaining players.
Well, but so is the guy who had to jump on the grenade. I mean, that guy's a victim of bad luck.
That's a willful act. This is not. This is, you know. He went out to play. He didn't went out because he thought, I'm gonna be able to give him like 15 minutes and my leg's going to collapse.
No, and again, that would not – the Warriors would not have done it if that was the plan either.
I know.
We just keep getting texts and calls that don't seem to understand that.
What have I told you about the text line?
Yeah, you're right.
888-957-9570. Roberto giving us a call from Pittsburgh. Hello, Roberto. Hold on, let me click you in here. Roberto, go.
Yes. I want to say thank you for taking my call, and my hat's out to you guys, 95.7 The Game. I love the show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to put my heart out there for Kevin Durant. You know, I think that, he sacrificed, it is melodramatic. He did sacrifice a whole career to help us win this championship and help us win that game. Without him in that game, I don't think we win that game. And my heart goes out to him and all Dove Nation. And that's all I had to say.
I appreciate it. Roberto, let me just say that, when we get to 5 o'clock, we reset the whole show. I got a talking point I've basically been stowing away for our prime time 5 o'clock hour. I'll tease it right now. Kevin Durant. For all the weird reasons that are hard to explain, maybe even a little embarrassing, he became a Golden State Warrior last night. Like Kevin Durant even admitted during the playoff run that it's always felt like the Warriors and Kevin Durant, or Kevin Durant and the Warriors. Last night, he gave it the office in a way that'll never be forgotten around here, and I can assure you this, that Kevin Durant, no matter where he goes, never in his life will he get cheered for harder than the next time he plays in front of a Warriors crowd, and I don't even care what uniform he's wearing. Kevin Durant could come in here wearing a Washington Bullets uniform, a New York Knicks uniform, a Miami Heat uniform. He could come in here wearing a Houston Rockets uniform, for Christ's sakes, and he's going to get a standing ovation. For the rest of his life, he's finally going to get a level of appreciation here that might not have been available had he not gone out on a shield like this. Because, as Jalen Rose said, and I got to tell you, I'm a little guilty of this myself, we do love our pound of flesh. He gave his pound of flesh last night. And Kevin Durant, what really makes him tick? What is he looking for to satisfy? Is he looking for that sense of, well, this isn't about me with them, it's about us? I think Kevin Durant was served a big scoop of us last night by the Golden State Warriors and Warriors fans, and I don't even want to get into what his future holds. I actually think he's more likely to remain a Warrior now than ever before. And I don't even want to get into the topic today. Today's not the day for that topic. But I really think that Kevin Durant is now attached to this team in emotional ways that it, a title, MVPs in the finals weren't able to create. And now we've quilted Kevin into the mix of all the Golden State Warriors, and he gets to sit in the beloved forever section normally reserved for players drafted and crafted by the franchise only. He's special now, forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, and it's a shame that this is what it took.
It is a shame.
Because to me, one finals MVP should have been more than enough. Like, I just don't, I've never understood the reluctance. And I think, and you, I know you know this, but when Kevin Durant made that comment, what he was saying was, you guys, the media, jerk fans, I'm not saying all fans are jerks, I'm saying the ones who took this approach are, you guys treated me like Kevin Durant here and the Warriors there. I don't think it ever felt like that in their locker room. Obviously, Draymond had an issue at the beginning of the year, but generally speaking, things have seemed pretty great. And to the degree that there's been issues locker room-wise, they seem pretty normal for a group of talent this prodigious that's been together as long as it has. I just think he should have been embraced for what he was, a huge part of two titles, and maybe could have or will be a third. And I don't know why it took him literally sacrificing his health and potentially ever being the guy we've seen him be before to get that acceptance. But I feel it too. I think that's a real thing that happens.
Klay Thompson.
Those talking heads who say we're better without him, that's just ludicrous. Like, that's crazy. This is the best player in the world. You could put him on the 30th best team in the league, and that team will make the playoffs. That's how talented he is. So we don't even pay any of that, no mind, because with him, we are really one of the greatest teams to ever play. Without him, we're a really good team, but you throw Kevin Durant out there, like I said before, one of the greatest ever. So we don't pay that any attention, because that's just stupid. Stupid, because he's a warrior. You saw what he did tonight. He sacrificed his health for us.
Now let's not ask stupid questions. Do you think KD is more connected to the Warriors than Steph Curry now? No. Like, you know, A-Rod was never going to be more connected to the Yankees than Jeter. I don't care what the hell he did. You can't replace the guy who started it all. So stop asking that. That shouldn't be the measuring stick.
That's not, yeah, I don't.
But it is.
But by morons.
Not just by morons, because you see this everywhere.
No. Morons are everywhere.
Okay, fine. They're all morons. Then okay. What are we doing? Why are we here?
Morons. Trying to make people less morons.
Well, that hasn't worked, has it?
No.
No.
It's a slow burn.
The fact is, in New York, Alex Rodriguez's numbers were better than Derek Jeter.
He was a better player every day of his career. Yeah. He dwarfed Derek Jeter.
Correct. Who's the guy they love?
Jeter.
The guy who started there.
Right.
And
well,
that's what I just said.
I'm not arguing with you.
Oh, okay.
I'm in the middle of a point here.
You're dunking for me.
Belt it. It happens everywhere. Ernie Banks is bigger than any Cub that's come since him because Ernie Banks
wanted to play too.
For whatever reason, the people of Chicago decided that he defined the Chicago Cubs. And it's like that everywhere. Stan Musial will always be the biggest St. Louis Cardinal. And Bobby Orr will always be the biggest Boston Bruin. It doesn't matter. People pick their favorites as a group for no apparent reason. But in this town, they've picked Stephen Curry. It doesn't make any difference.
But I can see why they did that. And well, no one should be jealous of that.
No, but the point is, we live in a culture now where everything must be ranked. And this thing must be more important than that thing, because otherwise we have nothing to talk about. The fact is, there's no reason why there should ever be a discussion about who the most popular Warrior is in this run. But there is, because we choose to be bored.
And we express our
boredom by ranking things that don't need to be ranked, which is why Kevin Durant felt like the national media and the nation as a whole decided to make sure that he was never a full-fledged Warrior in their minds. And it is to his discredit that it bothered him as much as it did, but it did. We can't get around the fact that we pick favorites and we will not let anybody else interfere with that selection.
I'm uncomfortable with the discredit part of that, but otherwise I think you're right.
When it comes to picking favorites, I think that from now on, Kevon Looney gets to enjoy some favorite status in this town for a very long time.
He says he's going to play.
That guy gave it the office, and he's going to he wants to play.
I don't care
more.
Okay. We just saw what happens.
Okay. Right, but there's no catastrophic injury available to Looney. That's just pain.
I'm just going to tell you, the Warriors trot him out, and he gets hurt again. The crap storm will be enormous. This one's avoidable.
We saw Klay Thompson miss a game in the finals to return effectively. His daddy taught a thing or two about toughness. We're talking to his daddy next. Michael Thompson joining us here, courtesy of Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. Michael Thompson joins us next.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Thompson off the screen, sets his feet, lets it fly. Three ball, good for Klay. The Dubs are still alive. Iguodala takes a handoff from Draymond to Curry. Curry takes a three, it's up and good! Curry has tied the game at 103 with 1:19 to go. Curry behind the back, dribbles baseline, feeds Iguodala, touch pass Draymond to Klay Thompson. Pump fake, fly by, three ball, got it! 56.6 to go. Warriors back up by three. Toronto calls time.
It honestly inspires you to play harder, knowing your best player can't be out there. You think of him every time you dive for a loose ball or go for a rebound, because I know him and I know how bad he wants to be out there. That's why he was out there. And it sucks. I feel so bad for him, his camp. He's going to come back stronger, though. That's the kind of fighter he is, and I'm going to miss him, man. It's not the same being out there without him.
Klay Thompson dropping buckets in-game, dropping science post-game, dropping microphones in these press conferences. And Michael Thompson, his father, has got to be very, very happy with what he's seen from his son, both on and off the court. Michael Thompson, a two-time NBA champ Lakers broadcaster. We won't hold that against him. We're very happy to welcome him back here. You can hear him, Thompson and Trudell, on ESPN down in Los Angeles. And, of course, the father of Klay, all guests appearing on the Dial Pad guest line. Dial Pad helps you make smarter calls. Michael, thank you for joining us once again. We got Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky along with me here today on the Damon Bruce Show. What a performance from the Warriors last night. It's almost difficult to discuss the win because of the weight of the Durant injury. Your son talked about playing inspired basketball the rest of the way. He's been doing that since returning from injury. 54 points in his last two games. You must be a proud papa.
Yeah. Let's get all the pleasantries and all that funny stuff, okay? Nobody cares about that. This is what I need to do. I need to go up there in that Warrior locker room, and I need to tell them they need to do four things. Just four things. Just do these things, and you'll win the next two games, fellas. Number one, stop fouling so much. My goodness, it's like that whistle blows every possession for Toronto. Number two, please, Yang rebound. You guys are small unless they start Cousins tomorrow with the lines they started with. You got to rebound. You got to Yang rebound and keep these guys from second shots. They must have given the Raptors from their turnover, and turnovers is another thing. Take care of the ball. You got to take care of the ball. They must have given Toronto 20 extra shots yesterday from the turnovers and from all the rebounds, but the offensive rebounds that the Raptors got. So they got to do that. And then number four is DeMarcus Cousins. He's got to be that third guy now. Step up and do what he did in game five. I know he did it in game two. He did it in game five. He can continue to play the way he played last night. Warriors will win these next two.
Michael, obviously you've been on teams where huge players have gone down due to injury. Kevin Durant tried to give it a go last night, pulled up lame. We all know what happened. Are you assigning blame to anyone in any direction?
Not at all. Kevin worked out. He was feeling healthy. He got checked out by the doctors. They were consulting with him, how you feel. And he says, I'm feeling good. I think I can go. I feel 100%. And unfortunately, that's part of the game. It could happen in the opening night. It could happen in the 100th game. That's nobody's fault. It's just the fate that you have to deal with sometimes.
I'm wondering, Michael, since Klay is sort of dealing with a similar thing, is that something that goes through your head even as a dad that just – Do you worry that he could be pushing himself to get back on the floor too quickly, or are the stakes so high at this point that you just do whatever you can?
You got to do whatever you can. Everybody's sore and beat up at this stage of the season. Everybody's a little, worn out, but your adrenaline's pumping so much because you're 2 wins away from the NBA championship again. So you just put it out of your head and you just go out and play like all the greats in the past have done with Jordan and Kobe and Jerry West, Magic. They've all, Larry Bird. They've all had to deal with aches and pains. Kevin McHale played on a broken foot. Isaiah Thomas played on a ankle that he had to use crutches to walk around on. So everybody goes through something like this to win a title.
You brought up DeMarcus Cousins, and his finals have been wildly uneven. One night he is hugely important to them. The next night he's a detriment. How do you – is there a way to foretell early on – what kind of Cousins you're going to get, or is it just something where if you're going to commit to him, you've got to put him out there and keep him out there until you get what you want?
You'll see it early in the game when whether he starts tomorrow night or he comes off the bench, how active he is around the basket, getting position and being able to score. Now, he's not going to go above the rim the way Shaq did and dunk on people, but he can use that big body to get position and get the angle and get Ibaka and Gasol in vulnerable positions behind him. And if he's moving his feet well, then you'll know he's in a good rhythm. And yesterday, that's what we saw from him.
Michael Thompson here on 95.7 The Game. Do you think Nick Nurse made a huge mistake by calling a timeout to basically ice his own team's momentum?
I think so. We're on the outside looking in. At that time, Toronto had all the momentum. They were rolling. Kawhi was putting on a one-man show. And all of a sudden, it's like he called a timeout to halt it. The Warriors on defense were on their heels. We all saw it. And I think when your team is rolling like that, or when a particular player is in a zone like that, you don't do anything to interrupt it. You let it play out as long as possible because, number one, when Kawhi was playing the way he was playing, he wasn't tired. You don't get tired when you're that hot. You just keep playing until it's over.
Speaking of Kawhi specifically, Michael, I'm obviously you play with some of the greatest of all time. Is there a comparison? People have thrown out the Jordan thing, and I like that in terms of the impact. But in terms of the actual style, the way he plays, how sort of machine-like he seems to be, I have trouble thinking of anybody to even compare him to. Does anyone jump to mind for you?
Well, you guys are too young to remember him. Maybe Ray does, because Ray might have been like 3 years old, 5 years old when he played. But Walt Frazier, he reminds me of Walt Frazier, always under control, playing at his own pace. That's why they call him Clyde, because he was cool. He was never rushed. Also, he reminds me of Oscar Robertson, too. That's the way he kind of played. He was so strong, he can get anywhere he wanted to on the court, and he was never rushed. So those are the two old-timers he reminds me of, Walt Frazier and Oscar Robertson. Ray, am I kind of right about that?
Oh, I remember them both well because, like you, I'm easily in my 80s. But the Robertson comparison is interesting to me because Kawhi has become the guy who is sort of their de facto point guard now. And Robertson was always that, even though he really was built more like Bill Bridges or Paul Silas. And it sort of, what I guess I'm getting around to is, does it take a special kind of coach or general manager to see somebody's skill set and basically say, you don't have a traditional position. You are who you are. Because Robertson was one of those very few guys in the 60s who really did not have a position. His job was to have the ball. And it seems like Kawhi Leonard's job is to have the ball.
Yeah, that's kind of the way the game's going now. Where we saw with LeBron, of course, in this new modern era after Michael Jordan. KD is the same way. Tracy McGrady, all these 6'8", 6'7", guys, 6'9", guys who used to play in the paint, mid-range, or with their back to the basket. Those days are over with now. You got guys 6'9", 6'10", who are not growing up in this new era of basketball, all want to face the basket and handle the ball like a point guard. So Kawhi is the new breed of players that are coming along now. You see him coming into the draft this year. Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett, and these kind of guys. Just because you're 6'8", or 6'9", you should learn that the back to the basket game too. But now everybody wants to face the basket and be Steph Curry or Isaiah Thomas.
Michael Thompson here on 95.7 The Game. Michael is a former, player. You hear and now current broadcaster. I'd like to think that you have a great sense of responsibility to tell it how it was from a player's perspective. And then when I hear things like this from Charles Barkley, it always leaves me scratching my head.
Yes, there is somebody to blame. The Golden State Warriors for putting KD out there. Listen, that was not right. You know, if you go back and
then the soundbite goes on and on and on. How can a player with Hall of Fame credentials be so clueless about a player's desire to play in a moment as big as the NBA Finals? And is it because he never won an NBA Finals? He can't comprehend what a real champion feels.
Well, you know, you're right about how Charles doesn't understand how much KD wanted to play. He felt his body was back to normal or healthy. He felt good in his warm-ups, no twinges, no pain. So he figures, okay, I'm ready. I'm doing everything full speed and drill. That means I can play. So, no, Charles is definitely wrong about this. It is not the Warriors' fault or Kevin's fault that he got hurt. He just got hurt, and he trusted his body to go out there. He wanted to play. So Charles is way off base.
Have you ever seen a general manager come to the podium in the emotional state that Bob Myers delivered the news on Durant with last night?
No, that's the first time you've seen a general manager break down on the stage, on a dais, and get so emotional because he knew how much it means to Kevin to be out there and how hard he worked to try to get back and how much he means to the team and to the fan base and to the organization. So I can understand. That's how we were all feeling last night. We were all crying inside last night for Kevin. He just happened to be crying on the outside for him.
Michael Thompson here on 95.7 The Game. You guys should really learn how to ask a question.
It's like a staring
contest to see who has the next question.
No, I mean, the Myers thing got me thinking. When he comes on the dais and basically breaks down the way he did, was that something that players in your era would have viewed as a weakness? Because it's not only the first time, I cannot think of a general manager in any previous time in sports history where that would happen. And if you saw that, even if it was in defense of one of your own teammates, would you view that general manager or that authority figure in a worse light because he let his emotions go like that?
No, not at all. If you let if that would bother you as a player or as a man, then you're a robot, you're an android or some kind of a amaton or something, automaton or something like that. Because he was just showing his human emotion, how much he cared for KD. I think every one of us talking right now, listening on the radio, as men, we've all cried in our life over something tragic that happened in our family or to ourselves. We've all shed tears, and if you haven't, then you're not human.
I want to spin it forward to tomorrow night, Michael, and obviously no Kevin Durant. Potentially, we're not sure. Kevon Looney may or may not be available. And then obviously, look, guys like Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, Bogut, Cousins at times have looked like they are running on fumes. What do you expect to see at Oracle? Can this sort of depleted, beat-up version of the Warriors actually win this series?
Of course they can. They're going to rally around Kevin, try to win this for him, like Clay said. They're going to get the support of the second greatest fan base in basketball, of course, next to the Lakers fan base. Oracle's going to be rocking tomorrow night, and the Warriors are champions. They still have four Hall of Famers that are going to be out there playing and competing. And DeMarcus Cousins, a former All-Star, going to be an All-Star again someday. Who knows? He may get to the Hall of Fame, too, because he's got that kind of talent. So, even though they don't have KD and they're banged up, no Kevon Looney maybe, or you know, banged up Kevon, they have enough to win this series. They just have to, like I say, stop turning the ball over, stop fouling so much, and get the rebounds. If they do those three things, they can win the next two games.
Michael, what do you think of the Toronto crowd's reaction to the Durant injury?
Disgraceful and disgusting. Obviously, all of them were not cheering his injury, but enough of them saw that he was hurt and seriously hurt, and they were cheering that he was now out of the playoffs. That was disgusting, a disgrace to the city of Toronto and their fan base, but it's not all of them, so you can't indict all of the fan base, but the ones that were cheering to see a player injured, that is about as low as it can get.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate your time. Good luck. There's something about Clay in game sixes that make me like their chances to force a game seven. I hope we see it again tomorrow night.
Yeah, we all do, man. Him and Steph and, well, everybody. Every man got to step up and be motivated to take it back to Toronto for Sunday.
Thank you very much, Michael Thompson. It's time for 5 o'clock.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.